welcome to the show, Barry Carrion. Barry, welcome.
How are you?
Well, I'm very good. Very good. I was just saying how much I'm looking forward to talking with you today because you are one of those people who stands at the intersection of lots of other resources and lots of men and women in business. And so tell us a little bit about your journey in the past years.
Oh, quite a journey. Well, briefly, let's say that I have been involved in three startup ventures over the years, going back to the 80s. So I'm dating myself. But I've also been in two Fortune 1000 companies at fairly senior levels. And I guess the commonality between all of those for me was taking either a fledgling company or division or department and creating and executing on a plan for growth. So whether that was putting infrastructure in, market channels, distribution, all of that. So that's why in 97 I decided I was laid off, like a lot of people experiencing today. Mine was for reasons of a merger and acquisition. And I decided I just didn't want to get on another airplane, that I would love to know people in my home community of Orange County. And so I started Carrion Consulting at that point to work with business owners and entrepreneurs here locally.
Now, Hal, tell me what you've noticed in the past 3 years. Have you seen any significant changes in the way we do business?
I have, and it's actually... It's almost a paradox that I'm noticing. And so, again, first let me just reiterate that I play in the world of small business and entrepreneurs, so I can't speak for what's happening in the big companies out there because it's been many, many years since I've stepped foot in one of those. But the paradox that I see, even before the economy took a nosedive, companies were really having to adapt quickly to the advancements in technology. And even with the introduction of Gen Y into the workforce, I mean, there were a lot of forces coming in to play, causing business owners to have to shift their thinking and really create some fundamental changes. And I'm talking things like even virtual teams, working off-site because technology can allow you to do that. So changing the whole paradigm of relationship with employees, talking about social media, e-commerce. So all of those things were coming into play even before the economy. The paradox that I see that's happened is that once the economy started to take a nosedive, then all of a sudden, while still holding on to those new thinking and new paradigms, people had to go back to the basics. Good economies cover up a lot of sins in business. And what I found is that when the economy went south, I can't tell you how many business owners I heard say, I got to get back to basics. And we're talking just things like tracking a sales process, proactively reaching out to customers and asking them what are they facing, what opportunities or pains that have cropped up, instead of just being order takers. So now they're having to balance this back to basics and fundamentals of good business with some of the new shifts and paradigms and technologies, and really learn how to integrate the two.
All right. Well, that's certainly interesting. I when you were talking about when the economy took a nosedive, I remember what Warren Buffett said, that you never know who has shorts on until the tide goes out.
Right. Exactly.
So
right.
I think as the tide went out, there were a lot of people who had to send out to get some shorts.
Absolutely. And get back to basics, right?
Yeah. So how are you seeing this? How are you seeing this transition? What do you see people doing as they get back to basics? At the same time, the basics have not the basics in terms of intent, processes, necessities, but the way we do that has changed dramatically because of technology. How do you see that playing itself out?
Well, it's let's put it this way. It's the basic is staying in touch with your customer, not just reacting to your customer. So it's proactively being there, establishing that relationship. I think that's a basic fundamental of business. And I think a lot of companies have gotten away with that. Business was just too good. Money was flowing in. Are they doing it differently today? In some cases, I think that's true. Frankly, some of the businesses are new. If you look at an e-commerce business, how do they stay in touch with their customer? I mean, is your email box full? Mine is. You know, it's the outreach of the email or the tweets or the blogs. But I actually think in the world that I'm experiencing with a lot of the business owners, it's actually picking up the phone and calling and visiting your customers. It's getting face to face. It's understanding what their pain is. They have a new pain. So you might have to look at shifting maybe your service or product, because maybe that is not fulfilling the need anymore. But the questions you should be asking are the same. You know, what's happening in your industry? What do you foresee? What holes are showing up in your business that we might be able to fill that you didn't have a year ago? So I think the questions are still the same, but it might lead to new and exciting new products and services. I mean, the company that has their eyes open, their mind open, their ear to the ground, and is really talking to their customer, asking the right questions, is the company that's going to be okay.
Do you see that means that there's a different kind of conversation from the traditional sales conversation that many people want to have with buyers?
I think that yes. The short answer to that is yes, because I think most people have a connotation of traditional sales as talking at or trying to sell something. And if that's your connotation of traditional sales, I think it absolutely has to change. To me, it's a consultative process. It's a questioning. It's understanding what your customer is facing. I have an example of a member in my CEO roundtable who's been hit very hard by the manufacturing downturn. And I said, well, have you talked to your customers? Have you gone out and talked to the people that buy this equipment? And in the various, because she touches many verticals, many industry segments, and what's happening in their industries? What are they foreseeing? What are they forecasting? And she had not done that. To me, that's just a fundamental of business. And now what she's found is that, wow, there's an opportunity and an opening here that's relatively new, that's all about recycling.
And did she pick that up by having a conversation with one of her customers?
With a number of customers.
Uh-huh.
Because what are they going to do with the waste? Yes, because now all of a sudden that is a bigger issue, a bigger pain, whether it's imposed by regulations or doesn't matter why, it's what her customers are facing today. And there's something she can do about it.
So even though we have this overload of information that it just seems to come every place, I mean,
right.
Twitter, Facebook, my email box.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fortunately, I'm not getting as much snail mail as I used to. My mailbox is not nearly as full as it used to be. But there is just an overload of information out there many of them talking about marketing, many of them talking about opportunities that are there. But what I'm hearing from you is there's nothing to substitute for a CEO of a company picking up the phone and calling a fellow CEO and saying, what's going on in your world?
Yes. That's my belief, Will. I stand in that belief very strongly. I think that's a fundamental of good business. I don't think that goes away. The world is shifting around us, and how else are we going to keep pace if we're not asking our customer how that's impacting them?
Can you imagine that that is the role of every salesperson to be so thoroughly conversant with their customer's business, so peculiarly confident about their ability to solve problems when they come up, and so comfortable with talking with a CEO? Can you imagine that every salesperson begins to have that kind of relationship with the decision makers at whatever level they are, but wherever that decision is, that's an executive. If they're making decisions, mm-hmm. they're an executive in that group. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine salespeople adopting, learning, becoming that?
I frankly think that that should be their role. You can't even have innovation. You can't even have a sense, I mean, let alone fulfilling basic and immediate needs of your customer. If you're not asking those kind of questions, if you're not tuned in to the answers, and if you're not listening with a really open, opportunity-focused mind or mindset, then you could be completely missing chances for new sources of revenue streams, products, services that wouldn't take that much to execute on. Maybe it's just a shift in the how you deliver your service, or one minor change to your product, or add an enhancement to your product. Yes, absolutely.
Well, what do you think is going on when a salesperson has 5-10 leads and they come back and say, well, I called all of them 3 times, sent them 2 emails, they don't want to talk? What do you think's really going on there?
Well, now, I understand I'm not an expert on sales, but
sure.
My guess would be that they're probably right. Someone doesn't want to talk to them because they're trying to sell them something.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And so I don't have a lot of time. We are bombarded, as you said earlier, with information, huh? Phone calls, emails, you name it. And I have to believe it's going to have something in it for me, some benefit to me.
Yeah.
To speak with you.
Well, I think some of the things that come to my mind are, one, that person has to be talking in a language mm-hmm. that the person is going to understand and listen to.
Right.
It's the language, and not only is it that, the second thing is they have to be talking about, they have to convey a knowledge of the business drivers. We can call it pain, but it's the issues that are out there, the goals that person has, either personally or business-wise, company-wide,
right.
Awareness of that, and my goodness, there's so much information available to come about what that is. We don't have to pretend that we don't know what that is, but to be able to talk that language, speak about those business drivers, and then convey that this is not about making you buy something. This is about seeing if there's a way that I can help you articulate, help you formulate, and then finally find out if there's any way that I can help you solve those problems.
and you may not be able to, but you may know somebody who can. I mean, I think that takes the pressure off as well. But no, I completely agree. I can't imagine that there's a business owner out there that is not experiencing challenges or some pains or has areas that they would that keep them up at night. And not that every salesperson has the answer to all of those, but if you don't know what they are, as you call them, the business drivers, if you don't know what they are, then you don't have a chance.
Yeah. I mean, I can tell you a story about what I experienced a couple of weeks ago. You know, this is a fellow that I called to interview on the radio show.
Mm-hmm.
And he invited me in. We spent about 2 hours. And in that 2 hours, he showed me his entire manufacturing process.
Mm-hmm.
He showed me how he monitors. I mean, he's an engineer, so he showed me how he monitors each step of that. He showed me the great detail that he uses to monitor his distribution agents across the country. And then when it was appropriate, my question to him was, well, are you have enough sales? He said, no, but I think that I have as many sales as I'm going to get from the United States with my current distribution model. Well, what do you want to do next? Well, I want to expand to Europe and Latin America.
Right.
Well, that's not an area that I can help him with personally. I don't have a list of reputable reps in Latin America, but I know a fellow who that's his specific area of interest and success is helping companies do business in Latin America. Tomorrow, we're going to spend 30 minutes with that fellow and with the owner of the electronics company, and we're going to sit down and talk about to find out if there's any way that the owner can accomplish his goal. And to me,
so that's
where salespeople need to be.
Right, that's a perfect illustration. I also think that there is a thinking that business owners need to adapt, and that is taking a look at where they think either their industry or their market or the economy or the world, I mean, you know, depending on what they're doing, but having some world view that reaches out 3-5 years and some worldview about what they think is going to be happening to impact their business during that time, and to be asking themselves, what do I need to be doing differently today? To not only just be around in 3 to 5 years, but to be thriving, to be able to play in that new environment. And I think, you know, your metaphor, your analogy about the who has pants on, I mean, that's, again, it doesn't have to be an economic downturn. It can just be a shift, either because we have a new generation coming through or because of technology. There are a lot of external things that will change how we do business or how our particular business might play in the overall world of customers and business, and we have to be asking ourselves that question, whether we're a solopreneur or we're running a multi-million dollar company, because nothing stays the same.
You know, in the last 20 years, lots of people talked about setting goals. Setting goals. I want to achieve this. I want to be here. I want to get this level of sales. I want to have this many new offices. And that assumed, I think that assumed, either a steady state of the economy or recessions that were really, you know, these little blips on the road. Maybe they were serious, but they came back. They bounced back after a particular period of time. Agree?
I do, but I think you can still have goals. I think you can still have a vision for where you want to be. In fact, I would encourage a business owner to do that. But then you have to say, well, what's out there that can impact that?
Yeah.
And
yeah, what I was writing down was the question that I drew from what you were saying was business owner asking himself, herself, what do I need to have, do, or be to thrive 3 years from now?
Mm-hmm.
What is it, you know, what do I think is going to be true about the industry, the marketplace, the world 3 years from now? What is my business going to look like 3 years from now? And what could it look like to be better in alignment, to take advantage, to thrive in that environment? Because I'm sensing that the pace of change has picked up dramatically in the last 3 to 5 years.
I think so. I actually think in the last 18 months, just simply because of economic conditions, you add that layer to it now. And that just complicates it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? There's an added layer here.
Yeah.
And you look at, I've talked a little bit about Gen Y, and I mean not a whole lot, but I'm just saying, you know, you've got this completely different mindset coming into the workplace. But then you also have baby boomers, which I am a proud member of.
Mm-hmm.
And, been extraordinarily hard hit by this economic downturn. A lot of layoffs, a lot of business owners have closed down or tried to sell and couldn't get what they, you know, thought they had in retirement. And you've probably heard people say this retirement, what retirement? I'm never going to be able to retire, right? Because, you know, a lot of baby boomers have lost much of their assets, whether the value was in their company or in their SEP IRA or 401k, wherever it was. And I think what we're talking about here in terms of asking these questions about what do I need to do differently today,
mm-hmm.
apply to those folks. It's, yes, the world has changed around us. We can sit and wish for old times, or we can say, what are those changes and how can I capitalize on them? What are the opportunities for me here? And we have to be asking that question. So whether you are a business owner or out-of-work executive, I guess, or a business owner who's lost the ability to retire because the value in your company isn't there now, the opportunities still abound.
Yeah, and the opportunities are certainly there, and they're not where they used to be.
No.
Things are changing dramatically,
yes.
And they continue to change. In fact, the velocity of change, I believe, is only going to increase. It's not going to slow down, far be it to go back to where it was.
Right.
Because we have this huge number of people, these baby boomers you're talking about, who I do not believe even understand retirement anymore. I mean, retirement used to mean stopping. That was a model from, you know, the huge manufacturing plants. You work
Agreed.
For 25 years, 30 years. It's something you
right.
you may hate, but
right.
you go through it so that you can stop
so
at some
quit.
Point.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't see people doing that now. In fact, I was talking to a very good friend of mine today, and what she said was, I'm not retiring, I don't even use that word anymore. I'm simply changing my priorities. I'm spending more time on some things that mean a lot to me rather than only focusing on what used to be my unique job. And I just wonder if that's in part what we're saying about companies when we talk about listening to the marketplace, listening to our buyers, and then begin shaping our company, our products, and our services around what the marketplace needs right now.
I think that I would add to that, and that is that as you're asking these questions, as you're listening and asking, I think your listening has to be a new filter.
Okay.
You can't listen to the marketplace or to your customer through the same old filter that has gotten you where you are today. Or I'll just talk for myself. I think I shared with you earlier offline a story where I found myself asking my group, my CEO roundtable, a question, well, if we're not coming out of this economic downturn in any significant way for 10 years, which we had just had a speaker in to tell us that, I said, if that's true, I don't know if it's true, but if it's true, what do you need to be doing differently today? And as I asked them that question, I thought, well, Barry, you need to answer that for yourself.
Uh-huh.
So I did. I mean, I had to step back and say, okay, I've got this consulting practice, I've got this CEO, but what else do I need to be doing? What else could I be doing? What other opportunities are out there? And I just think that that filter has to be one of not just filtering it through the same old thing we've always done. So, because if you do that, then you're going to say, well, I hear that need, but I can't do it.
Uh-huh.
We don't, you know, it's uh-huh. we can't do that. It's not in our policy and procedure. It's at that level of filter that's going to hurt us. You can't filter it through what you currently do. You have to filter it through what can I do? What is the opportunity? So the listening has to be different.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. What? Back to that question, what do I need to have, do, or be to thrive 3 years from now? Once I have that belief, and I think we could certainly substitute in there, what do I need to have, do, or be to increase my sales?
Mm-hmm.
Once we have that articulated, that's a commitment, and then it's how do I get there?
Right.
What do I need to do? And I think it was Voltaire who said, it's amazing how once you are committed, the entire universe rises up to support you.
I think that's true. I don't know who said that, but...
Yeah.
I like the sentiment.
Yeah, once you're committed to something, it's amazing how the whole universe rises up to support you. That certainly means we've moved a long way from being the victim.
Right.
We are now part of the part of the creative group, and
right.
That to me is what I think a very significant part of the business change today is. The companies are going to be thriving 3 to 5 years from now. Are companies who are creative today.
They're creative, they're listening differently, they're seeking opportunities to maybe even create new markets.
Mm-hmm. Well,
this has been a
wonderful conversation. Tell us a little bit. Just tell us a little bit about what it is that you're doing, what project you're working on right now.
I'd love to. I guess I've already said that I work with entrepreneurs and business owners, and I do it in three ways: as a consultant and business advisor for the companies who are still really founder centric and chaotic, and help them navigate that change to a level of sustainable growth where they have more control and more freedom. I run the CEO Roundtable, Business Owner Roundtable here in Orange County that meets once a month for, you know, where they get peer advice and counsel. And I recently authored a workbook on creating great business partnerships. Working with business partners who are not getting along is something I've done and developed a expertise in for 17 years. Not many people can say that. And so I thought I would put all that knowledge to paper. Really, my vision is reaching out to the millions of entrepreneurs out there who are thinking about partnering. And trust me, in today's there's so much to be said for doing that, so much good, to help them make a better decision about choosing a business partner so that it's a sustainable and lasting one. So that workbook is on a new website called newbusinesspartnership.com, and I launched that 3 months ago. So that
Wonderful.
that was one of the answers to my question, what do I need to be doing differently?
Good. Very good. So if somebody wanted to get in touch with you, what would they do?
Well, they can email me at Barry@carrionconsulting.com. They can call me at 949-640-2141.
What was that number again?
949-640-2141. And then I have the carrionconsulting.com website and newbusinesspartnership.com.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for taking
my pleasure,
taking time out of
fun.
Your day to spend talking about these things. It's been a real treat.
Terrific. Thank you so much.
All right. And there we have it. Someone who's been watching and talking and working with businesses, large corporate businesses to small business to entrepreneurial startups, observing, thinking about, talking about the changes, not only in the marketplace, but the changes inside businesses that we're going to be thriving 3 to 5 years from now. A question I would have is, what is your business going to be doing 3 to 5 years from now? What it will be then will not only be influenced, but will be determined by what you do now. So the real question is, what's it look like to thrive for you, and what do you need to do, have, or be right now in order to thrive? So we'll be right back after this word from the SLMA.
Five to 20% of every company's marketing budget is spent each year to create just two things, inquiries and sales leads. And yet only 10 to 25% of the demand is ever pursued by a company's sales channel. On the Sales Lead Management Association website, you'll find 250-plus articles from 55 authors covering both B2B and B2C, both inquiry and lead generation. During our most recent quarter, we had over 20,000 visitors and 51,000 pages viewed on our website. So if you haven't already, go to www.theslma.com and sign up for your free membership in the Sales Lead Management Association. That's www.theslma.com. And now back to Will Chris, the Pilgrim on the 405.
Well, welcome back. We have an interesting experience today. Interesting for me and for you as well. We had a very powerful guest who was going to be with us today, but because of some opportunities that came up, she wasn't able to be with us. And in talking with friends, what they said to me was, "We'll give you a big challenge. Why don't you interview yourself?" And I thought, my goodness, that sounds like an interesting, certainly a challenging thing to do, and maybe it would be interesting. So today, we're going to spend the second half of the show interviewing the Pilgrim on the 405. So welcome, Will, to the show. We'd like to spend a little time talking a little bit about some of the things that you observed. And you've been wandering around to a lot of businesses and talking with lots of CEOs. You must have been forming some opinions about how businesses have changed. Would you be willing to share that with us? Sure. That's a great question. And what some of the things that I've noticed in talking with business owners is that two things are very true. One, because of the enormous demands upon their time, they are very reluctant to open their doors, pick up the phone, to talk with somebody they don't know, or to talk with somebody who doesn't sound like they would bring them value, or who sounds like they're more interested in pitching rather than having a conversation about business. On the other hand, when I have seen business people talking to other business people, what I find is that they're most interested in talking about those business drivers, those business issues that keep them up at night, that seem to be impossible to solve, or to even share some of their own successes about businesses. So what I've discovered is that there's an interesting bifurcation here between all those places that a business leader wants to keep people out, keep spam out, keep advertisements out, keep opinions out, and create a space where conversations can happen. In fact, one of the things that I did about a year ago now is I spent time working with people to help them understand that the internet is really a series of conversations. The only way to do business on the internet is to generate conversation. Now, those conversations may be it may take the form of filling out a form, downloading a PDF white paper. It might be listening to an audio track. It might be pushing the button to have a conversation with somebody, to chat with somebody in the sales or the service part of a company. But the internet, at its best, well, certainly can deliver information by the boatload. But at its best, its most fruitful is when it leads to conversations, and generally leads to conversations on the phone or face-to-face. And people are open to that when they perceive that there's value there for them. There's value that's going to be presented to them, either value in the conversation itself or value in the articulation of problems that before were foggy, muddy, unclear, or perhaps even value in bringing a solution to bear, either through introduction to someone else or providing a good product or a service that the other participant in the conversation might be selling. And when the conversation is the central point, then there's space created for that. So I'm not convinced that it is that CEOs or business leaders do not have time. They got the same 24 hours we did. They make choices about their time, as do we all. And what they're looking for is they're looking for those conversations that they believe will bring them value. Well, all right, Will, Mr. Pilgrim, tell us, given these beliefs that you have, how have you changed your business model to align yourself with the new processes, these new ways that business leaders are working? Well, I think I've done a couple of things. One, I have paid more attention to supplying business leaders with valuable information for free. Now, I am very careful to not confuse this with free consulting. I use Web 2.0 technologies to deliver information on a regular basis. People are free to opt out. They're free to opt in. They have alternatives to get more information or to get less information or to stop the information flow completely. But what I find is that a steady flow of information that is aimed at, in my case, is aimed at helping people to improve their sales force, to help them to improve their management tactics, attitudes, and behaviors. But having that steady available to people is a way of letting people know that I'm available, letting people know that here are answers, here are some solutions that are available. And so what I've done is created this unobtrusive email comes out once a week for salespeople, for CEOs, for sales managers, to give them some scenarios and talk about that a little bit in the email. I've also been aware that my job is not to solve problems for people. That becomes free consulting. My job is to help people have hope, have expectation, have the belief that their problems can, one, be articulated clearly, and number two, that there is a hope that those problems will be solved. And so once we have that hope, once we have that expectation, that belief that the problems can be solved, chipped away at, can be affected, influenced, then we have a then we have a reason to deepen the conversation and to come up with a way of putting together a relationship that will be mutually beneficial. Solve the problems and, you know, provide a revenue source for me. Now, the essential to that is being invited in to have the conversation. So aligning my message, my solutions with the specific words, conversations, ideas that a business leader has is very important to me. I need to be able to repeat back to that business owner what they say to me, the problems that they believe that they have. And so what I have done is changed from listening to marketing people in my organization, changed from listening to all those things that we used to say, and begun to focus on specifically what words am I hearing in the marketplace? What words am I hearing business leaders say? And how can I get those words back to them in the form of possible solutions that will help them to believe, to hope, to think that it's possible these problems can be solved? Well, Will, I hear you on your radio show always asking people, what have you done to increase your revenue? So I'm going to ask you the same question. Well, we heard Barry talk a little bit about going back to basics. I think that what's really essential is getting very clear about what my process that leads to revenue is. And then once I see that process, then what I want to do is come up with behaviors that will help me move throughout that process. If you think of a football field, it's what's the game plan for moving the ball down the field? It's how will we come to that place where people say, let's get going, give me an agreement, let's start the process. Let's start the solution. How do we do that? And for me, it's getting very clear about what that process is. Now, I've found that there's lots of businesses there who don't understand the process they want to use. They don't have a system for selling. In fact, what their system used to be was generating lots of proposals, and out of those proposals, getting some orders. And from then on, it was simply being an order taker. They certainly supported customers. They were very good at staying in touch with those people who were buying from them. But they essentially did not have a strategy or a system for moving the ball downfield. They companies I'm talking with very often don't have a way of monitoring where the ball is on the field. Yeah, a lot of hope, a lot of smoke, a lot of talk about it's going to close, it's going to close, it's going to close, but not a very specific way of monitoring that, positioning, finding where the ball is on the field, finding where the ball needs to be on the field, and then talking about what the steps are to move the ball down the field to a touchdown. So what I've done to increase my revenue is to go back to taking a look at what behaviors. Now, behaviors for me mean I need to be talking to, 10, 15 people a day. I need to be dialing, emailing, having lunch with business leaders on a regular basis. And that's a task. It starts with how many dials am I making? And so I use a tool that we use at Sandler Training called Sales Accountability. And every day I mark down how many dials I've made. And not every dial is going to result in a conversation, but how many dials I've made, how many conversations I have, and how many emails I've sent to follow up on those conversations. So I've begun to structure my day and look at that. And of course, like most good salespeople, I have a coach, a manager, that I speak a couple of times a week about the same time on Monday and Thursday. And we review my behaviors. We review attitudes. And we also talk a little bit about techniques. So what I've done is put myself under that kind of discipline to get clear about what my behaviors are so that I can look at where the ball is for the various opportunities that are before me and help them move downfield. Well, what have you done to reduce your expenses? Well, I think that it's certainly easy to think about reducing expenses by, you know, cutting out certain things, and I can certainly say, you know, I've looked at the various places where my the costs of business are, and I've reduced some of those. But I think even more important than that is looking at time and resources. And for me, reducing my time and resources might involve spending some money, because the most important resource that I believe I have is my own time. So when I look around and think that perhaps I'm spending a lot of time putting together an email campaign or managing an email campaign, if I can outsource that, if I can find somebody else who can do that for me, at least as good as I think I can do, and maybe even better, if I can find that place to outsource, it might make sense, and very often it has made sense, to offer them the opportunity to do that for me, to create the space for me to do what I'm really good at, is to having those conversations with business leaders. I might enjoy putting emails together, playing around with graphics, coming up with ways of using Constant Contact to see what's going on underneath the hood. On the other hand, that may or may not help me to increase my revenue or help me to serve more people. So paying attention to ways where I can offload some of those tasks that are could be better done by someone else, could be done by someone else and free me up to do things that someone else couldn't do, I think that's one of the key ways that I have looked at reducing my expenses. So, Will, tell me, how do you develop the people who are most important to your organization? Well, that's an interesting question. That's an interesting question because, essentially, I'm a one-man band. I have a colleague in Scott Bailey. We work together. We certainly take a look at where our strengths are, and we share with each other. I think in my organization, that organization includes networking, fellows in networking. It includes partners who are going to help me get introduced to new people. I think it also has something to do with building relationships where there may or may not be an opportunity for me to get revenue immediately or even ever. And so developing myself, to me, might mean reading some books. It might mean looking around the internet. It might mean going to conferences or seminars. But I think it also means deepening my relationships with people so that I'm really developing them, helping them to get better. In fact, one of my coaches said to me, find a networking group that's going to meet regularly. And as a trainer, don't look to them as prospects. Look to them as people that you're going to help develop. As you help them sell better, manage better, they will see what you do, and they will then have the inclination to introduce you to people who need to have what you have. And I think that's certainly true in what I've seen with other people as they develop their organizations. It's not go to work on those people right that you're managing. It's help develop them so they can go to others and do that task that's there. But it's, development, I think, really means helping people to be the best that they can be to achieve the goals that they have, rather than developing them so they're going to achieve the goals that I have. So those are the things that I've paid attention to. Well, Will, when you take a look at these 50 to 75 people that you've spent, what, like 3 hours? 3 hours at a shot with, right? I mean, when they say they want to be on the radio show, you spend at least an hour with them, right? And then you have the radio show, the interview, and then you spend another hour with them afterward, debriefing and talking about where they want their business to go, to find out if there's anybody in your network that you could introduce to them to help them get there faster, quicker, more efficiently. So when you do that, what do you see as the biggest challenge that business leaders have today? Well, that's a great question. I think what I would see as the biggest challenge is changing their managerial style, which also has to do with changing the style that they expect their people to sell in. Because the world is so filled with information today, information is so available today, that certainly in the sales process, people aren't calling to find out information. They're finding information on the internet, they're downloading white papers, they're looking at price sheets, they're looking at comparisons. They're getting all the information they need before they pick up the phone and call. Likewise, managers, as they work with people, one of the biggest challenges is changing from telling people what they have to do, what they ought to do, what they need to do, moving from that to getting clear about where the manager, the owner, the leader wants to go, and having a conversation that sounds a little like this. You see that mountain over there? That's where I want to climb. A year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years, I want to be at the top of that mountain. I'd love to have you with me, but I got to ask you a question. Do you think I can lead us up there? Do you trust that I can get us there? And if you do, the next question is, what part of that do you want to go? Do you want to go there with me? And if you do, what part of that trip do you want to have? What part of the, what responsibility in that do you want to share? Because I'm going to that mountain. I think in enrolling people in that vision, that dream, and then asking what they need to do, have, see, think, what new resources that might they need to enable them to get there, that's an essential conversation in today's marketplace, because we're dealing with a whole different set of processes about developing teams, developing organizations that are in an environment that is changing so fast. And the critical pieces are right there before us in our employees and our colleagues. So developing them, helping them, enrolling them in the dream, the vision that the leader has, and then asking them what they see needs to change, what things they need to be developed in, what sorts of support do they need to get there. I think that's the biggest challenge that business leaders have today. Well, Will, I want to thank you for being with us today. I mean, what I hear is a very process-oriented person, and I'm wondering, what is your passion in all of this? And maybe you can tell us a little bit about what you enjoy doing, what you see that you bring to business leaders today. Well, what I really enjoy doing is helping people through these change processes. I really enjoy the tough parts where people are, as one client said to me today, out on the ledge looking down how far that is, and helping them to see that ledge is not the way to go, that there are tremendous possibilities in business today, and it really does have to do with changing from expectations to in invitations, and it has to do with the conversations that we have. Now, this certainly doesn't mean we don't hold the people accountable for what they said they would do. A lot of monitoring is possible today because of our technology, And it's not obtrusive. This is not Big Brother sneaking in and watching. This is not micromanagement. It's simply turning the light on so that we all see what we're doing, how we're contributing, and what things are getting in our way. So I think, I mean, for me, it's participating with those businesses who have a dream, who have a vision, who have a place they want to be, who want to thrive. I help people articulate their goals, their vision, their expectation. And then I help them focus on where they are and what's getting in the way. And I walk with them sometimes for several years to help them get there. That's what I enjoy doing. And I would be delighted to speak with anyone in business who wants to talk about their business, find out where they want to go, find out what needs to happen as they get there along that way. I just enjoy talking with people about business because I believe the better businesses we have in Orange County, the higher quality of life we have. And I would invite anybody to call me at 949-355-6013. That's 949-355-6013. Email me at WillChrist, and here comes a tough part of the email. You ready? WillChrist@WillChrist.com. And I'd look forward to hearing from anybody just to sit down and talk, not to be sold, not to be, manipulated into, but simply to sit down and talk and explore the possibilities. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk a little bit about that today. And I want to thank my good buddy Paul Roberts at octalkradio.net for... he didn't quite talk me into taking on this whole gig, but having the opportunity to have a radio show where we can showcase, we can invite, we can have conversations with CEOs in Orange County and some of their support people, because this is one of the pieces that helps us thrive, is talking, communicating, seeing the models of what success means. So... thank you again for the opportunity to be with you on Pilgrim Talks in OC. I look forward to being with you again next week when we will have some very interesting people on. So if you want to talk to me, it's 949-355-6013, WillChrist@WillChrist.com. And as usual, all of our shows are archived at octalkradio.net, or you can find them on iTunes or many other places where podcasts are aggregated. So have a great week.
You've been listening to the one and only Will Crist, the Pilgrim on the 405, only on octalkradio.net.